Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. I'm Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy and with Managing Editor Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt, how are you doing? Here we are, meeting again for one of our wonderful podcasts. Always a great part of my week.
Absolutely. So, Richard, this is a, I keep saying this is another friend of yours. So let us know who we're talking to today.
Well, here is something that is a wonderful happenstance that occurs when you do things around the place. And I'm very supportive of a lovely chap, Habibur, in Bangladesh. And then they put on another conference. I was in there doing it. And I heard this wonderful woman, Jessica Stone, talking about play therapy and about digital realm of play therapy. And wow, I thought, oh, we got to talk about that. So that's who we're talking to. I sort of a friend, as I say in the magazine. But once you say hello to me, that's it, you're a friend. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So we're going to go across and talk to Dr. Jessica Stone, who is a licensed psychologist. She works in private practice over in Colorado, and she's been a practitioner, professor, presenter, mentor, and author for about 30 years. Wow. So she knows her stuff. And as you will hear, she's developed this most amazing therapy tool.
I love this stuff of what she's doing, coming together, bringing generations together through digital stuff.
Now, before we jump across to Jessica, let me just encourage you that if you enjoy what we're doing here on the Science of Psychotherapy, please consider becoming a subscriber over at thescienceofpsychotherapy.net. We'd love to have you as part of the tribe.
Absolutely. Come on down. Heaps of things. I mean, you get the notifications of all the freely available stuff, our podcasts, lots and lots of various information there. But our wonderful academy, our magazine, there's so many things that can let you know more and more about what you do, which is what we're all on about.
Exactly right. Okay, Richard, let's go across to Colorado. Dr. Jessica Stone, welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here with you both.
Yes. Hi, it's Richard here. Now, of course, here we are looking at each other sort of very similarly across the oceans, but we first met at a conference in Bangladesh. And just to let everybody know that Bangladesh is doing fabulous things with psychotherapy and with clinical work. But I was just really, I such enjoyed your talk, and we're so interested. Matt and I have been talking about play therapy and various things for ages. So I wanted to get you in, and you said, yes, yay. So it's beautiful to have you here. And we've done a bit of an introduction for you already, Jess, but I wonder if you could just now take us a little bit more into that. I mean, you're working in play therapy, but this really interesting work in virtual reality. What got you into this sort of frame?
Really, it's been a long time coming. So I am a psychologist in the United States. I have a PhD in clinical psychology with an emphasis in ecosystemic clinical child psychology and play therapy. So that's a big old mouthful, right? And in that program, one of my professors really focused on the concept of speaking your client's language and how important that was. And he was really talking about vernacular and cadence, you know, just the way people speak, and that you as the therapist, it's a good idea to match that so that the client will feel comfortable. One of the key tenets of play therapy is that play is the child's language. And really, I would extend that because play therapy is for all ages. So Hopefully play can be our language for all our lives, right? We were just saying how we were just playing a little bit before we got into the recording. So play is important for all of us at all age. But certainly for children, they have a limited vocabulary, a limited experience base, and they may not be able to verbalize the things that they're feeling and experiencing and going through. So play therapy becomes their language. So in all of that, and focusing on speaking the client's language, whatever their age, it started to become very evident to me that one of the languages that is currently spoken is digital. And that if we think of that in terms of interests and the way we communicate. I mean, even right now, we're all in different areas. We're on a digital platform to talk to each other and see each other. And my older children, so I have four kids, and two of them are in their 20s. And when they were younger, they started to get into video games and all of that. And it's not something I was brought up on. And, you know, when I was young, we were super excited to get a answering machine. Before that, your phone rang and you didn't answer it, then you don't know who it is and what's going on. So I was certainly not brought up with all of this. And when my kids got into it, I was like, oh, what's this all about? And how do I feel about it and everything? And they started to quickly realize that I needed to enter their world and I needed to learn more about it and play with them and understand why it was important to them. And then I just saw these amazing things happening between myself and my own children. And I thought, what would it be like if we expanded this into the therapy world too? And with my clients, I started entering into their world in these ways. And that has just led me down this path of all sorts of amazing and wonderful things. And that's where I am today.
Wow, that is so brilliant. I'm hearing digital play natives here. And because we hear the term digital natives, but if we throw play in there as well, because a lot of, you know, what the kids are into in the digital realm is play. Like you mm-hmm. said, it's their language. And so to be able to learn a new language for those of us who are maybe a generation removed, this is wonderful.
Right.
But this idea of, I think the what is the most difficult thing for both therapists and the general public is just grasping that what play is. And we think of play as sports, which actually team sports really are not play per se, because they're an organized, you know, regulated framework, but they can be playful. But this idea of an unregulated self organizing experience. And people, again, real and silly, an enormous amount of incredibly academic and intellectual knowledge emerged out of play. You know, Einstein imagining himself sitting on a light particle and throwing for the universe and all kinds of various things. So is it sometimes difficult to convey this the play therapy experience is to both clients or perhaps the children or the parents? How do people respond to the idea of it?
I think it really varies quite a bit, but I think there is a lot of mystique in general, because I kind of straddle the world as a psychologist. I am doing other things besides the focus of play therapy, and then I have the play therapy portion of me, and then I kind of straddle the two. So I can step into, and not that there aren't any psychologists who are play therapists, but predominantly there's a difference, and I'm not sure what that is, but a lot of psychologists who work with children don't necessarily do play therapy, and then you have play therapists, and I bridge both, as do some others. So the point is that the people who don't do play therapy, it's hard for sometimes for them to really wrap their mind around what's therapeutic about it. We hear all the time in the play therapy world, oh, you're, and I'm putting air quotes up, just playing. And there, historically, is it the play an icebreaker so that you can get to the real work, or is it the real work itself? And a play therapist answer would predominantly be that it is the real work itself. And fundamental portions of that to communicate is identifying those therapeutic components. There's a prominent play therapist, and he's recently passed away, but Dr. Charles Schaefer wrote books and all sorts of presentations and all sorts of things about the therapeutic powers of play. And there's 20 core agents of change that can be identified depending on the interaction. And so it's trying to figure out what the client needs, case conceptualization, and then treatment plan, and then the intervention modalities surround play. And within those, you're identifying these components that hopefully are working toward whatever that treatment plan is that you've put in place. But as you're interacting, you're identifying those components and figuring out, okay, how does this fit into this client's world? what does this mean for what's going on in their life and what their goals are and where they're trying to be, or you are trying to help them to get to, and then bridging all of that together. But the interaction is surrounding play.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, this is exactly what I mean. My mentor Ernest Rossi was mentored by Milton Erickson, who's, you know, very well known for being very open and undirective. And this just exemplifies what you're saying to me, exemplifies that perfectly, that you let the client create an experience and the therapist has a wide bank of knowledge so that they can monitor and to some degree regulate, but also keep up with the client, because I know they're talking about the 20 elements of play. Well, people were doing that before, and we need to differentiate them so that we, as you say, make the therapeutic process productive, and we recognize that this, and that's fascinating. 20 elements that differentiated, and I do notice there's a couple of books with Schaefer's name and your name, so you're in heady company. Beautiful.
Yes, that was, I would say, very much a highlight of my career was to get my name on a book cover with Tal Schaefer. So that was really amazing. You have those highlights, right, in your career, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah, that's
wonderful. I'm wondering if we could get really practical and just talk about some concrete examples of play and, you know, in the digital realm. Have you got some, maybe a case example or something we can talk about?
Sure. Specifically in the digital realm. So, well, one of my very favorite things that I'm just so excited about, and so I'll go straight to that because I think it comes through, is virtual reality and using virtual reality in psychotherapeutic sessions, like directly in session. And even now, I've been 100% telehealth since COVID, so a little over a year. And even now, I'm meeting with some of my clients who have virtual reality headset. I'm meeting with them. They're in their location. I'm here, and we meet within the different programs. But I'll tell you an example of an in-person and sanitizing all over the place. So there's left out information for sure because, you know, it's an actual client. But I have a client who has had a rough go of it in early years and is now living with a grandparent. And the life before the grandparent was very chaotic, very hectic and chaotic, and not a lot of structure and whatnot. And then the life with the grandparent is very structured. So you have this huge contrast, and it's not, you know, I'm not even speaking value judgments about either place or anything. It's just not structured at all and then very structured. So this child went from one environment to the other with a big change in between. And so there's a lot of hesitancy in our interactions. You know, I don't want to make a mess. I don't want to do the wrong thing. I don't want to whatever. I don't know quite where my boundaries are and all these parameters and everything. And so we get into virtual reality. We're doing all sorts of other things before then. And one day I said, hey, you want to try this? And she's like, sure. So we get into virtual reality. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with, but these are just off-the-shelf kind of programs, okay? So there's Vacation Simulator and Job Simulator. And are you familiar with those?
I've got an 18-year-old who's right into VR, and he'll hang out with his Canadian friend watching, they're going to the movies and they're watching a movie in VR or they're playing games.
Right.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Vacation Simulator and Job Simulator, basically the programs are, they're cartoon-like in graphic, and you choose either a job you're going to do or you choose a place you're going to vacation. So this particular person liked the job scenario and would really lend toward the office job. And so she'd go into the office job and just tear it apart, throw things all over the place, put food on the copy machine, chew gum and then spit it out and put it all over the place, papers everywhere. There's a little fridge, like a mini fridge with snacks, pull it all out, spill it everywhere, like chaos. There's a bot that comes and talks to you and she throw things at the bot and just like, you know, all sorts of emotion and experience and rebellion, really, because here she is in this situation where it needs to be so closed down for boundaries and parameters. And so I let her do that for a period of time, just get it out, you know, just like, whoa, just tear that place up. And then she'd be able to go back out because there's no real world consequences, right? There's no mess to clean up after that. It's perfect. It's VR. She shut it off and woo, there's no coffee anywhere. There's no wads of gum hanging around. And then I noticed over time that, and certainly that we had some discussions in there and processing, but over time, she started to not need that as much, much less chaos, much less destruction. And then it came to the point where she would start picking up, she'd throw the coffee cup, but then she'd pick it up. And then she'd start putting things back in order. She started getting her job tasks from the bot that would come over instead of throwing things at him. And then in conversations with people in her life, I was able to find that other things in her life were starting to relax as well. And what I came to, among a lot of other things, again, I'm sanitizing all over the place, is on this fundamental level with this interaction I'm talking about, is that she really needed a place to process this change, this huge change that she'd been through. And this gave her the environment, which was very, very safe for her to be able to do that. And then she was able to come back around to, okay, I don't need to be like that. I don't need that chaos anymore. Now I can start to put things back together. Yeah. And that's what was happening in her life. And I honestly don't know if we would have gotten to the same degree of it if we'd done it with a different tool. Because yes, you can make chaos and whatever, but then you're looking at this huge mess and then there's the process of what do you do with it? And it, you know, this way she takes off the headset and it's not there anymore. And there's pros and cons to that. But in her situation, that was a pro.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, because quite often in some of the, maybe in Santra or maybe in art sort of therapy and these things, you can symbolically do that, or you can do it with miniatures, mm-hmm. or you can do it on the page. But this is to almost literally, or get the sense of, and it, I mean, I can hear things like, you know, taking back control, becoming the, you know, the locus of control, lots of technical terms. But as Erickson used to say, to return the task of effective therapy back to the client, you know, to give them a mechanism so that they can find the ways to heal themselves. And it mm-hmm. it seems very much that the process that you allowed the child to have there through the experiential process, the very experiential, that really the child let you know, she let you know, I don't want to be confused by this. I don't want to throw the cup. I do want to be. And so those natural dilections of the child were able to, and personality traits and temperament and so on and so forth, because I mean, I could imagine perhaps there was a child who threw everything around and had other reactions to the mess they were making. Mm-hmm. But that would give you insight into the child, which you would Absolutely. Then respond to.
Right. And yeah. putting that together with what their history is, what their current interactions are. Often children have difficulty in who come to therapy have some difficulties either in some social interaction, either that's with friends or with teachers or with their parents, you know, somewhere in there, they're having some difficulties. And when you see these kinds of, in any kind of play, even if I'm playing like the game Moncala, I don't know if you're familiar with Moncala, but it's a wooden board. It originated in Africa, as far as I understand, and like long ago. And basically, you're moving glass beads from spot to spot. But there's a lot of strategy involved. And even in that game, which is relatively simple, I've had three-year-olds play it before, that how they approach it. How are they people pleasing? Are they strategizing? Are they counting ahead? Are they, what is their frustration tolerance like? All kinds of things that we can see in these interactions. Oh, you go. No, you go. Okay, I don't want to go first. You go first. Or I'm always first and I'm always going to win and I'm going to spit in your face when I, you know, like what is that interaction going like? And what does that mean? How does that translate and generalize out into their other environment? And that's a lot of what we're doing in play therapy and in the digital realm, because there's so many programs, so many possibilities, and so many things that can be customized, that now we're looking at this world where this client needs X, oh, we can find something that provides X. Actually, we have 45 things that might provide X. Which one would be best for this client? And so I just get super excited about the possibilities and all the things. It's overwhelming as well, because then you have to figure out, how do I vet things? How do I decide what's going to be therapeutic and what's not? And what does that mean for me therapeutically, like my theoretical foundation? What does that mean in general? Where are the ethical guidelines and parameters? And it's a new world, and there's not a whole lot of that out. There's some, but not a whole lot of that out there. So there's a lot to think about. I'm not saying just like, fly out there and take any old thing, because that's not true either. Yeah. The concept of the amazing things that are available is just really exciting.
And I guess when you're working with a small child in your own play room, I mean, you know that room very well. You know all of the toys and the equipment in the room. Right. Now you've got this vast, anything's possible, right? In VR, we see working with people with phobias, and the whole desensitization using VR is very popular now and very effective. And so it sounds like exactly the same thing. If you're immersed in a world that is perceived as, relatively realistic, then you're going to have great efficacy in that space, right?
And of course, because it's that fundamental thing, safety.
When you're dealing with phobias, though, there's not an inherent sense of safety in those VR worlds. I mean, you can feel very unsafe.
Right. It depends on what you're using, right? I mean, if you're on like Richie's plank experience, where you're walking out on that plank off that building, that's not my jam for sure. That scares me. My stomach, like everything in my body tells me this is dangerous and I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And it's very realistic. Yeah.
And your mind, your body, that's the immersive nature of it. And that's one of the reasons I think we need to continue to have all these conversations, is to figure out as a field as best we can. How do you get 10 therapists to agree on anything? I don't know. But as a field, trying to to decide where those parameters and what those guidelines should be, and who gets to decide that, I'm not exactly sure. But we need to definitely have caution, because it can be overwhelming for people as well, and you need to make sure your client is a good candidate for it and is ready for that. Dr. Les Posen there in Australia has been doing phenomenal work with fear of flying, and I was on a panel with him at Cedar Sinai for Virtual Med Conference, and just him talking about, he used to actually take people up in airplanes, like physically charter a plane and put the person on the plane and work through all of that with them. And now he can do it all in VR. And the person's mind, body, emotions, nervous system, everything believes they are on a plane. And think about it in terms of, like, for decades, we've been talking in therapy about imagine a place where blah, 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 blah. Imagine this, right? And so then the therapist is requesting that of the client. The client is conjuring up whatever they are in their mind. Yeah. And then they may or may not be able to adequately convey whatever they're imagining to the therapist. So now, how many generations here of this information is getting carried through? What the therapist might be imagining that the client is imagining may or may not even be close to each other. But in VR, you can actually create that world, and you can both be in it. And the client can say, here's my world. Here's what I am.
You have some consensus, which is excellent.
That's such a great point, because, I'm a really big believer in using imagination. I've got quite a vivid imagination, so I don't have any problem. But I'm often, with clients, and they really struggle to even imagine, some of the simplest scenarios. And this is obviously a solution to that. I mean, as long as you've got the program to elicit the right scenario, right. I guess, That might be a constraint, isn't it? Because we are reliant on the programmers that are creating the environments. Right. And I'm guessing that as these things evolve, there will be therapists creating environments for therapy very specifically, like we're seeing in the world of, phobia desensitization.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a lovely segue into something that Jessica has done, which is be involved in the creation of an app
in relation to Santray. That's actually specifically got some therapeutic parameters and things that you're able to mm-hmm. to be in control of or at least understand. How'd that work
Absolutely. So, well, the way it started was I have known about and used Santray for decades. I was just saying earlier that I've been in this field for 30 years now. And so when a friend of mine put out a plea on Facebook that when the tsunami hit in Japan in 2011, she put out a plea on Facebook saying, we need materials. Like, we can't get anything. Things are destroyed. Like, we have all these people to work with. And she's the co-founder of the Japanese Association for Play Therapy. So she was, you know, at the forefront trying to, not only for her own work, but for the people who were under her to help. And so I went around and I gathered a whole bunch of materials and some people donated things, and Federal Express here in the U.S., they shipped it for free to Japan. Like, it was amazing, just a coming together of all these efforts. But I got home and I said, but what about Santray? And for those who don't know what Santray is, Santray has been around for almost 100 years. Dr. Margaret Moenfeld was using the world technique, and she had come from war areas and trying to figure out for children how they're processing that and how they're working through the trauma of everything everyone was going through at the time. And so with Santray, it's a projective technique. And basically, it's taking the inner emotions and experiences and putting it onto something. So we have the Rorschach blot, ink blots that, you know, most people know and been in media and things like that. So that's a projective technique. It looks like a bat. It's a butterfly. It's my mother killing something. You know, like, it could be anything of what that internal experience is, and you're putting it onto something. So in Santray, you're creating a world, and it's either in a more directive way, as the therapist says, okay, let's create a tray of something that happened today or this week, or, you know, some parameters around it, or it's open-ended. Here's the materials. See what comes to you. And so I was trying to figure out how they were going to do it. Long story short, ended up seeing my iPad that I'd gotten as a Mother's Day gift or something that really my kids had taken over at the time. And I said, oh, it should be on an iPad, because I'm thinking portable, right? Portable, savable, something that you could take anywhere in a crisis situation. And you can't lug all that stuff around from place to place and person to person. And how do you set it up and how do you clean it? Like, all that stuff. And my husband is a self-taught programmer, and how do you teach that? My brain doesn't work that way, but anyway, kudos to him. His does. So thankfully. And at first it was like, well, I don't have time to work on that project. I called around. It was crazy expensive to get going. So, then one day he said, hey, I'm going to start working on that project. And, you know, he's my husband. So I'm sitting there going, which project? Because there's a million to be done around the house all the time. And he's like, oh, that Santray project. And so there it went. And we built it and beta tested it and asked all sorts of questions, but really fundamentally wanted it to stick with the key tenets of Santray work. And those important components, such as the kinesthetic experience of creating with your hands and the experience of going through and looking at all the different possibilities of what could go in the tray. Because in a programming world, you could put a search function in there easily and, oh, I want an alligator, type an alligator, an alligator pops up. But part of the process of Santray is in traditional looking over the shelves and seeing what speaks to you and what is something that is going to help you express what it is you need to in this world that you've created. So we created the app, and so it's something that can be used in person, and it can also be used in remote. You have encrypted end-to-end encryption, secure ways to use it if someone's in a different location. I've connected with people in Australia from here all the time. And then we also have a VR program. And the VR program is a whole nother step, because now not only can you be up above the tray like you would if you were, you know, traditionally creating it, but then you can also be down in the tray and interacting with the world you've created. So let's say somebody had a scene where they got bullied on the playground or something like that. So they could recreate that scene, right? Here are the other kids. Here's the school. Here's some trees. Here's all that stuff. And you can actually walk up to these characters and interact with them. They're not going to talk to you as though you were in a video game or something like that, but they're there and you can say what you need to say. You can, you know, recycle them and get rid of them, or, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. You can introduce some helpers that could come in. Like, what would happen if the school teacher had come in at this moment, you know, and process it that way. So yeah, it's been quite a road. For 10 years now, we've been working on this and improving it all the time and adding features that we feel are important. And just recently, we were recognized by, and they have made us a partner of the Lowenfeld Trust in the UK, because they recognized that we were staying true to the tenets of Dr. Margaret Lowenfeld, which is another one of those career-making moments, for sure.
Wow. Oh, wow. I just for a moment, Matt, if we could just get everybody listening to pull their jaws back off the floor. I'm just sitting here going, wow, that's fantastic.
That is amazing. And what sort of feedback have you been getting from therapists who have started to use, you know, this digital tool?
So initially, there was resistance because anything digital, you know, like, I don't know how to incorporate that into the work that I'm doing. And I really think that has to do with people. Therapists have so many things to think about, right? It's not just the clients in the room, but it's what is the process? What does the client need? What have they been through? What are they expressing? What are they showing? There's so many things. How it all fits into our theoretical foundation, how it fits into the case conceptualization. There's so many things for us to pay attention to, that to add something to the repertoire that we're not familiar with, that we don't feel comfortable and capable in, that really throws a wrench into it and can make it very complicated. So I think that initial resistance really had a lot to do with those pieces. And then, as I was saying, there's so many options that it's fantastic, but there's also so many options that it's overwhelming. So when I brought in the virtual sand tray, initially it was, wait, why would you do that to Santray, was common. And then you'd have a few people here and there that would say, oh my goodness, this is amazing, because this is what kids want. This is what they're doing. This is the language they speak, basically. And so then over time, you know, because I feel like I'm just the turtle. I'm just moseying along. I'm doing my thing, doing it the best that I possibly can, hearing the feedback and understanding. And then it started to have some traction and people saying, oh my goodness, I used that. I saw that. Someone else told me about it. We don't do a lot of marketing. I mean, it's just the two of us. We're a bootstrap little company, you know, so we're working to expand, but it's a lot of word of mouth. And now, and then of course with COVID, with the need for remote work, and also when you're in person, cleaning, and how do you reliably sanitize all the things that come with working with Santray? And so we've really exploded through COVID and added features that were COVID specific that we felt were necessary. And now, even today, I met with two very, very prominent, well-known, I won't call them out because I don't know if they would, I didn't ask them, but they... prominent people in sand therapies, they are very excited about using it. They've been using it. And so the tide has turned, and I'm thrilled not only for us and for me and all the hard work, but also because think of the accessibility. Think of how many more people can utilize a fantastic tool like this. The people who are even in their office and don't want to have a big sandbox with a bunch of stuff around, but they can still use and have this valuable tool. I've used it with adults. I had an adult client who, he was a psych student, and he really was very much in his head, you know, oh, you're doing this. Oh, you're doing that. Oh, I know what you're doing all the time. Like, and it was like, okay, I need to drop down is what I call it, like from his head to his heart, if you will, and get through all this intellectualization that he's got going on. And he had something really big in his life that he was afraid to tell other people in his life. And I said, okay, will you just humor me and try this out? And I handed him my iPad to do the virtual sand tray. And at first he's like, oh, I know, you know, like he knew exactly everything. And I said, okay. And so I just left him be for a few minutes, and you know how, when you know, when they've like entered the zone, in whatever somebody's doing. You know, it's like la 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 la, and then all of a sudden they're humming along, ooh, right? And he starts doing that.
Yes.
And his depiction was basically a line drawn between these two scenes, and one of them was this scene that he wanted for his future, and the other one was the conflict. And the conflict had like dead things in it and three people like all in conflict and everything. And the other side was this really idyllic, beautiful scene of what he wanted for his future. And he looked at it and he told me he was done. And I looked at it and he said, so what do you think? And I said, well, what do you think?
Yes.
And he said, I think I need to do blah, 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 blah. Like I need to, you know, tell the people and do the thing. And I was like, there you go. and I couldn't get him there otherwise, because it was way too much in his head.
Well, I'm very attracted to one of those elements that you said back there is for those people who look at Santray therapy and think this is a nice thing to do, but I don't do it all the time. And I have wonderful Santray therapist friends, and they have, you know, a wall full of fabulous things and all the rest of it. And I just go, I can't do that. I've got a bag of stuff. And, you know, that sort of can come out and get dumped on the table, but I haven't got the space. And that's that's very attractive to my thinking of, wow, this is something that in that serendipitous moment that it feels right, like that one you just expressed then, it's literally about just leaning out and pulling out a piece of a screen of whatever form that I'm
right.
That's very exciting for expanding your, talk about expanding your toolbox. Wonderful.
And we have over 7,000 at this point, over 7,000 of the 3D models. So I have a collection, and I was brought up in this field that basically you can tell how long somebody who's been in the field by how many Santray miniatures that they have or images, symbols, right? And so the longer they've been in those, the more of that wall space is covered. But I don't have 7,000.
Yeah.
And so the other piece of it is that great accessibility of all these items. And then one other thing is that there are people who don't want to or cannot use the traditional. They don't want to touch the sand. They're immunocompromised, so they're unable to, or they have sensory reactions and they don't want to. And then there are people who are highly traumatized who can be triggered by a highly sensory experience. So you might not want them to do that initially, and maybe you're even titrating them toward it. So you might start them in the digital and then titrate them toward the traditional. So there's all different. I have people when I'm in person who do a traditional tray and a digital tray in the same session, because they can do different things in each one. And are the themes similar? Are they different? Like, it's fascinating. You can save the trays. So I can go back as the clinician and I can compare, did they progress? Did they regress? Like, what were the themes that either went through all of them or just in the couple? And then a client can work on a tray they were worked on 2 weeks ago, 3 years ago, whatever it is, because I still have it saved for them and they can work on it again, which is something really valuable too. And then finally, and then I will let you speak, I promise, is that we also have a focus on accessibility in terms of physical accessibility. So everywhere we could on the touchscreen, you know how you can zoom in and out of a picture or something with your two fingers, the pinch and spread kind of thing that we do on our screens. For some people with motor difficulties, they can't use two fingers to do that. So everywhere we could, we put one finger controls in. So there's a way to do it with your two fingers zooming in on the screen. And then there's a way to also do it with one finger with a little slide. So we tried to make it so that so many more people can use it. And we're actively at the moment programming even more accessibility features into our virtual reality program as well.
Yeah. What a cool husband. I want one of those. I'm not sure how I can work that. No, but
and I just had a question just about using the tool. So obviously traditional play therapy using, you know, sand trays, you can only do that in the therapy room. Is this a tool that the client can also use outside of the therapy session?
Our virtual sand tray app is intended for in-session use.
Mm-hmm.
So it's available through the Apple iOS store. So we can't It's under medical. It's under the medical program section, and it's priced accordingly as a therapeutic tool. Yeah. So most people are not going to just run out and buy it and use it. When you're connected remotely, for instance, there are components, features that are built in that will intentionally sever the connection between the devices past a certain point, so that the client isn't using it outside of session.
Yeah.
They have a free version that the client downloads, and it connects to the paid version of the therapist. And it's intended to be used in the session, and then that connection is severed. And that's all on purpose.
Yeah, that's very clever.
Mm. Yeah, very cool. I know there's a million more things to say, but if there was a sort of a final roundup comment or a thing to leave people with, what would you, the opportunity, you know, the floor is yours for a moment or two.
I hope that listening to podcasts like these and with many others talking about this as well, that people can really embrace and start to recognize the power that digital tools really can bring to the therapeutic process. And it doesn't mean that it's all you do and all the time, but it's part of what we have in our repertoire and what we can offer to our clients. And that there are, no matter what your theoretical foundation is, I would argue that there are identifiable therapeutic components that you're going to find in this type of interaction and in this play, even down to what they're attracted to and interested in, how they set up their characters. All of those things can tell us some really valuable information. So I hope these types of podcasts and conversations really continue to expand our minds and our offerings to our clients, to the digital natives and the people who are digital immigrants, so that we can just have a more well-rounded offerings to our clients in mental health and increase our accessibility to the people who need it.
Wonderful. And what an exciting expansion to our field.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't it? It's really, but it's just that thing of expand, open, create, utilize the Ericksonian thing. Do not close your mind off to anything. But I absolutely really appreciate the point you're making, which is so important. This is not talking about taking over, becoming the next thing, the only thing. It's an expansion and an opportunity. And then our job's to create opportunities and circumstances.
Okay, fantastic. Dr. Jessica Stone, thank you so much for joining us here on the Science and Psychotherapy podcast. And we hope to talk to you again soon.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Bye for now. I am really glad that I was attending that conference in Bangladesh. Isn't this an absolute gem? This is a real find. And I mean, a fine. She's been around for ages. It's a wonderful coming together of these sorts of things. My jaw is a little bit on the floor, man.
Yeah, I'm very interested in this whole topic of, you know, being in the digital realm, especially now, you know, so many of us have had to do therapy over Zoom, and this sort of is taking things to another level. I've got kids that are right, you know, they're digital natives, they're right into virtual reality and all that sort of thing. And I'm imagining there's going to be a lot of opportunity to connect with kids and young adults that where this is their world in a therapeutic way, which is going to be absolutely transformative. I'm really keen to have another conversation with Jessica further down the track about the developments in this area.
Yeah, we've got a real source here, and I absolutely look forward to having something in the magazine, I hope, in a couple of months.
Well, that would be nice, yeah.
Yeah, we're on to everything. So don't forget, you guys out there, jump in. This magazine comes out every month, and the subscription is worth it just for the magazine, let alone the incredible wealth of information and certificate. Based education. You'll get a certificate for all the education you do on the academy. We hope you jump in and subscribe with us.
Absolutely. But,
for now, I think we have to go and do something else.
That's right. Always a pleasure. Thank you, Richard. Thanks for introducing us to Jessica. And thank you, everybody, for joining us here on the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. And we will catch you next time.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.